So our reading this morning is from Galatians chapter 5, verses 13 to 26. You, my brothers, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the sinful nature. Rather, serve one another in love. The entire law is summed up in a single command: love your neighbor as yourself. If you keep on biting and devouring each other, watch out, or you will be destroyed by each other. So I say, live by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the sinful nature. For the sinful nature desires what is contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit what is contrary to the sinful nature. They are in conflict with each other, so that you do not do what you want. But if you are led by the Spirit, you are not under law. The acts of the sinful nature are obvious: sexual immorality, impurity and debauchery, idolatry and witchcraft, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissensions, factions and envy, drunkenness, orgies and the like. I warn you, as I did before, that those who live like this will not inherit the kingdom of God. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law. Those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the sinful nature with its passions and desires. Since we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step with the Spirit. Let us not become conceited, provoking and envying each other. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So I want to share a few words about this passage now. Thank you, Ian. So we're doing this series about faith on the front line. I'm just going to move this down here so I've got something to... Faith on the front line. And we're thinking about how do we live out our faith when we are at work, or when we're at college, or when we're at home, or when we are at the shops or in a cafe, or how do we live out our life, live out our faith all the time? And thinking about, well, actually, we don't spend most of our time in church, do we? We spend most of our time elsewhere, interacting with people who maybe don't believe what we believe, maybe people who have different views and understandings. So what does that mean for us? And how does our faith operate and function in that kind of setting? And it's interesting, I'm probably the least qualified person to talk about this because I have such a strange front line of thinking about that place where we are, because I actually do spend quite a lot of time in church. And so I'm probably the least qualified person to talk about this. I was thinking about the jobs that I have had before I was a vicar, and a couple of them didn't go very well. So my first ever job was I had a paper round. And it was a Sunday paper round. And I thought, well, that's great, because I only have to do it one day a week rather than doing Monday to Friday. I'll just do a Sunday paper round. The problem is, have you seen Sunday newspapers? They're massive, aren't they? You know, you get the magazine and the other bit, and you know, it's huge, these huge things. So little skinny me, you know, imagine me, I was thinking about 12, little skinny me carrying this huge bag with all these Sunday newspapers in. And the thing is, I was terrible at my job because I'm a bit of a daydreamer. And so I'd be wandering from house to house near where I lived. And I'd just be kind of singing songs to myself and, you know, thinking about things. And I ended up putting the wrong paper through the wrong door. And eventually the news agent, this lovely lady who ran our village news agent, had to speak to my dad and say, I don't think this is right for Phil. I mean, that was the start of my professional career, realising that I couldn't even keep a paper round. And then I got another job later on when I was a bit older. My cousins ran, well, they didn't run, but they worked for a go-karting company. You know, this place where it's like go-karts, there's little engines in them, and you kind of zip around a track. And I thought, wow, that's great. So I spoke to my cousin and said, oh, can I get a job then? He said, yeah, actually, we're looking for somebody. So I started this Saturday job at this go-karting place. And there were bits of it that were really good when you actually got to, when it was quiet and you got to ride the little go-karts around. But most of the time it was pretty dull and boring. Anyway, this group of businessmen came in for their sort of Christmas party or something, you know, and they were having a go on these go-karts. And I had been there a few weeks and they said, Phil, now you get the privilege of having the checkered flag and you get to stand on this little podium, and when the last person comes in, you get to wave the flag. And I thought, oh, great, I get to wave the flag. So I'm standing there, And I don't know what happened. It must have been my daydreaming again. But as the winner came round, you know, they'd done sort of 10 laps. As the winner came round, I dropped the flag just before he made it through. So I was scrambling around on the floor as they zipped past. And again, I kind of, after a while, I didn't go back to that job. I lost it. So my track record with being in the workplace isn't that great. I think that's why I had to be a vicar. God decided there was nothing that Phil could do. Let's get him ordained and make him a vicar. But the point is, we gather for church on a Sunday, but actually most of our time we spend elsewhere. But you might ask the question, why would I want my faith to have any impact on my work life? Because actually, you know, maybe my faith is a private thing. It's between me and God, and I don't want it to have any impact on where I work. You know, that would be embarrassing to have to talk about Jesus or faith or prayer or church where I work. Why would I want to do that? Or why does it even matter that our faith has any influence on how we work? Surely we can just get on with our jobs. I was really, it really opened my eyes to see how important it was that we live out our faith in work when I saw these dots. If you imagine that these dots represent people, the people of the world, the people in our society, okay? So there's loads of dots. You see, most of them are black, and there's five red dots. If you imagine that those five red dots are Christians, so they're kind of gathered together in the corner, huddled together, and it looks pretty, they're pretty insignificant, aren't they? In the big picture of people, it's mainly black dots, and there's a few people who believe in Jesus who go to church and kind of live out their faith. But it's a minority, and it's not a great picture. But actually, when you think about it, we're not there, are we? We're there on a Sunday, maybe. We kind of huddle together to encourage each other, to build each other up. But actually, most of the time, we're like this. The red dots are scattered throughout that picture. We're not huddled together. Most of the time, we're out there in the world with our friends at work who don't know Jesus and don't go to church. And so when you think about it, actually, the impact we can have is massive because we all relate to people who don't yet know Jesus and who don't go to church and who don't have a faith. So the picture isn't that we're this tiny minority and we don't matter. The picture is that if we can grasp how important our faith is to the whole of our life, we can have a huge impact wherever we are in the world. I want to talk about three things this morning. I want to talk about the character of Christ and what that means for us. I want to talk about the fruit of the Spirit. I want to talk about life in the Spirit. So first of all, the character of Christ. We need to understand that there's a difference here between character and personality. It's not that when we become a Christian, we all become the same. We all have exactly the same personality. Because I know quite a few Christians and they do not all have the same personality. And it's not like when we become a Christian, we lose who we are. I was quite worried about that at one point. I was particularly worried about that with becoming a vicar. I thought, if I become a vicar, I'm going to have to become a certain type of person. I'm not going to be able to be me. But actually, the truth that I found is that as I got ordained and I became a vicar, I've become more who I am. And I think that's because that's what God wanted for me. And I think that's the same for all of us. That as we step into this journey with Jesus of being a Christian, we find not that we become less ourselves, but we become more ourselves, more who we're meant to be. In the New Testament, it's interesting because they don't often talk about people's personalities. So they don't say, oh, Jesus was really funny, he was always cracking jokes. Or Peter was a bit miserable and he was an introvert. Or, you know, Simon was a real extrovert. They don't tell us about personality, but what they do tell us about is character. So they'll talk about Jesus' kindness and his generosity. They'll talk about Thomas's doubting. They'll talk about their character, but not their personality. And these are two different things. When you come to Jesus, if you're quite a shy person, you might remain a shy person when you are a Christian. But your character will change and grow over time. And if you're a real extrovert, if you're somebody who's really loud and you love kind of speaking, when you become a Christian, you're not suddenly going to become all kind of meek and mild. Because that's who you are. That's who God made you to be. He made you to be, you know, the party animal or whoever you are. But actually, your character is going to change because there's going to be things happening inside who you are that mean you're going to become more like Jesus. But becoming more like Jesus doesn't mean you become less like who you're made to be. It means you're going to be more like who you're made to be. Someone said to me like this, being a Christian is about working out who you would be if Jesus was you. So it's not that you're becoming someone different. It's Jesus living inside you, your personality, who you are, but developing a new kind of character, growing those good things in you of patience and love and kindness, the things we're going to look at in a moment. The second thing is, it's not about being nice. Sometimes think being a Christian is just about being nice. That's all that matters. You just have to be nice. But that's not true. Because Jesus wasn't just nice, was he? Jesus, who went into the temple and turned over the tables because he was furious at what they were doing with God's house. He says, this is meant to be a house of prayer. And they changed it. And he was angry. He wasn't just nice. And actually, he really challenged people. People who were living hypocritical lives where they were going into the temple and thinking they were all great. But actually, deep down, they were dirty and they were horrible and they were angry and they were jealous. Jesus challenged those people. He wasn't just nice. He was challenging. And being a Christian isn't just about being nice. Sometimes it's about being challenging. It's about saying the hard thing because it's the right thing rather than doing the easy thing. And another thing is that we don't work this up inside of us. We don't just kind of concentrate really hard and think we can do it in our own strength. God comes to live inside of us. Now, you might think, how can I be godly? When we're talking about having godly character, you might think, that's fine for you, Phil, you're a vicar, but how can I have godly character? How can I do that? I want to read to you something that a man called Paul wrote, who was one of the first Christians. And he wrote this: at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous man, though for a good man, someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this: while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Jesus died for the ungodly. Jesus did what he did not for all the nice people, all the people who were, you know, doing good things. He died for those of us who struggle to do the right thing, which is all of us. You know, those people who act like they've got it all together, but really, you know, they haven't. Because we all struggle. And Jesus died for all of us. It's not for the godly. It's not for those who've got it all together. It's for those of us who struggle, who find life hard. So what does it look like? What does it look like to have Jesus living inside of you? Well, it looks like these things: love, joy, peace, patience, goodness, kindness, faithfulness, self-control. These things are God's character that come and live in us and over time grow our character. And it doesn't happen all at once. And it happens at different stages with different people. And it depends what you're doing in your life. I mean, if you're the parent of a toddler, then it's going to be really hard maybe to be patient, and you're going to have to, or if you're caring for an elderly relative, your patience is going to be really pushed. So it's not an equal playing field. We're all at different stages. But notice that it's not about doing good. There's nothing there about what you do. It doesn't say, you know, you need to do this, you need to give money to charity, you need to visit poorly people. Now, we might do those things, but this is about character. This is about something that develops inside of us that then spills out into the things we do. But it starts with what is going on inside. It's a way of being rather than a list of things that we do. It's a way of being rather than a list of things we do. And it's called fruit. And fruit takes time to grow. Fruit doesn't grow by trying hard. Fruit grows by having the right conditions. In the previous house that I lived in before we moved here, there was an apple tree at the bottom of the garden. And it had obviously been there for years because it was huge. And we didn't do anything to help it grow. We didn't water it. We didn't look after it. But every year, all these apples would appear. So many apples that we used to invite the local primary school to come up and to collect the apples and learn about how seeds grow. And they'd all sit round in our garden and have a story, because my wife's a primary school teacher. So she'd bring all the kids from the school. This huge apple tree that my kids loved to climb. But we didn't do anything to make it happen. It just seemed so effortless to this apple tree to do it. And in one way it was natural. But actually think about how the apple tree started as a tiny seed. It took years and years to grow that fruit. And it needed exactly the right conditions. It needed the water and the sunshine. It needed those strong branches that were able to hold the fruit. And it's like that with us. This stuff takes time to grow patience and kindness. It doesn't just happen by us trying hard. It happens by us inviting the Holy Spirit to live inside of us. And over the weeks and the months and the years and the years and the years, this stuff grows. I heard about this lady called Ruth, who grew up in a Christian school, and she hated it because in this Christian school, they told her that God was angry with her, and that if you didn't go to church and if you didn't do the right thing, God would be even more angry. And so as soon as she left school, she thought, right, that's it. I've had enough of God, because if God is angry, if God punishes people, I don't want anything to do with God. And she said, I'm an atheist. When I hear things like that, I think, yeah, I'm an atheist too. I'm an atheist to that kind of God, because that's not the God I believe in. I don't believe that God is angry. I don't believe that God does punish us for not going to church. Anyway, she left school, nothing to do with God. She got a job, and her boss was called Jonathan. And Jonathan was the best boss she ever had. That's how she described Jonathan, the best boss she ever had. And she had some lovely colleagues too. And one lunchtime, she was sat with her colleague, Sarah, and they were talking about Jonathan, their boss. And Sarah said, oh, you do know that Jonathan's a Christian? And Ruth thought, what? This guy who's really nice, this best boss I've ever had, how can he be a Christian? It just doesn't add up. If God is angry and vengeful and full of wrath and anger, how can Jonathan be somebody who believes in God and who goes to church? And this colleague said to Ruth, yeah, and I'm a Christian too. Anyway, this colleague and this boss invited Ruth on an alpha course, which is like a way of exploring the Christian faith. And to begin with, she said no, because there was such a kind of tension within her between what she thought about who God was and then this character that she'd seen in her colleagues of kindness and love and patience. And these things just didn't add up. And eventually she got to the point where she thought, I'm going to have to go on this course because I'm going to have to explore it. I can't let this go. So she went on alpha. And eventually, through a lot of tears and a lot of working through baggage that she had from her past, she came to faith in Jesus Christ. And that happened not because she heard a great sermon or because someone prayed for her. That happened because her colleagues at work were kind and patient and loving, because they showed who God was to her in her workplace. That's quite scary, isn't it, for those of us who think about, I'm a Christian in the workplace, that I have to show these things. But actually, that might be how someone comes to know God, because people have all kinds of baggage about who God is. But if they can see in you loving kindness and goodness and patience and faithfulness, then they will see God for themselves. And when you look at these things, don't we all want more of that? You know, even the atheist would say, yeah, I'd love to be more loving and more peaceful, to have more kindness and more goodness. Of course we all want these things. And of course these things are the character of God, the God who made us and loves us. It's who he is. He is loving and kind and peaceful and gentle. He is all these things, and he wants us to be like him. So the final thing I want to talk about is life in the Spirit. Jesus lived a life that was completely connected with God. He showed us what it was like to be human and divine at the same time. No one else had ever done that. We thought God was far away, distant up there in the clouds somewhere. And Jesus showed us that it's possible to have heaven and earth come together. That actually the human project of being a human wasn't bound for disaster, but actually was bound for great glory in him. So Jesus, God became human in the person of Jesus. And he lived that life, and then he died. And through his death, he destroyed the power of death, because death could not hold him. And he rose to new life, not just so that he could live forever, but that so all of us, not just so that we could live forever, but so that we could know God now in this life. And then it didn't end there. He sent his Spirit to live in us. So that while Jesus may not be walking around earth now, it's even better actually, because now he can't just be in one place at one time. He can be with all of us all the time through his Spirit living in us. That's the story of Christianity. And we are invited to live a life in the Spirit, a whole life, not just so that we feel warm and cozy when we sing songs at church, but so that we can know God with us when we have a difficult day at work, or when we're caring for our elderly relative and we're just running out of patience and running out of kindness. or when we're looking after our kids and we're running out of patience and running out of kindness. God wants to be with us all the time. This life in the Spirit is for all time. And that fruit will grow over time. But we can't do it alone. We live in a culture that's all about the individual. But actually, we weren't made to live as isolated individuals. We were made to live in family and community. And that's what church is about. So this morning, when we're making promises for Mila and we're saying, we promise to help her bring up, to be brought up in the community of the church and in faith, we say that because we know that Mila's never going to do it on her own. She needs her parents around her and her godparents around her and her church around her, encouraging her as she grows. Because it's not easy. And we all need that. We need each other. So we don't do it alone, and it takes time. So in conclusion, the character of Christ lives within us. The fruit of the Spirit grows within us all of through time, and the life of the Spirit is for all of us, for all time.